Today on Maine Calling, the seabird people love to hate, gulls. If you live in Maine, especially anywhere near the coast, you have a story. The gull that stole that precious lobster roll, or splattered your car right after you washed it, or even worse, treated your head like a bullseye. Many of us love to hate on gulls, but others think they're magnificent and are concerned about their fate. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we focus on Maine gulls and what researchers are learning about them. Even though they are highly adaptable, their populations have been in steep decline for decades. Why? We'll talk with a researcher who has discovered a technique for keeping gulls away from your food, and we'll hear from artist Jamie Wyeth, whose portraits of gulls are unforgettable. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville. And Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and dedicated to creating a community where residents are free to pursue their passions. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum School recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. When you imagine a seagull or gull, do you see soaring wings in the blue sky? Or do you picture a dive bomber attacking your beach picnic? Today, we will find out why these seabirds deserve some respect and why conservationists are concerned about their declining numbers in Maine. Joining me for the hour, Dr. Noah Perlett, who is Assistant Academic Director and Professor with the School of Marine and Environmental Programs at the University of New England. He is also president of the Nuttall Ornithological Club. And Dr. John Anderson, W.H. Drury Professor of Ecology and Natural History at the College of the Atlantic. And joining us from England, Dr. Neeltje Boekert, who is Associate Professor of Animal Behavior at the Center for Ecology and Conservation at the University of Exeter, and has some really fun research to share with us. What are your questions about gulls? Do you have a story to share? Send us an email. talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Welcome back, Dr. Perlett. I'll start with you. The first question, gull or seagull, and why does it matter? Does it matter?
The classic question about gulls, for sure. I always use the word gull only because we could go to Chicago right now and be at a Cubs game and have gulls flying all over the place, yet they're not at the sea. But it could be the same species that we see in Maine. So for me, it's gulls.
Okay. Well, tell us about the species in Maine. What kind of gulls do we have? What is the gull that most people refer to when they refer to a seagull, the one that is following the fishing boats, that is dive bombing our picnic?
Yeah, so the most common gull that everybody is seeing is the herring gull. We have a number of species of gulls in Maine, and the gull species change based on the summer or the winter, but the most common one is the herring gull. Inland, it's the ring-billed gull, but along the coast, mostly the herring gull. And what's really cool about that is that the birds that you see in the summer are not the same individuals that you see in the winter. They're very migratory, but they're always here. And so that's really kind of a fun component to the birds that we're seeing.
So where do the ones who arrive for the summer come from? And where do the ones who depart go to?
Yeah, the ones that are here in the summer, this has been the most, enriching part of my research, and John, who's on the call too, his as well. We put big color bands on their legs, and people see them all over the country and in Canada, we've had birds that we've banded in Portland be seen in the winter in Texas on the Gulf Coast. But most of the birds that are breeding or here in Maine in the summer are going down to sort of the mid-Atlantic states or New York in that area for the winter time. And so presumably the birds that are here in the winter are coming from eastern Canada, sort of a similar distance, a couple hundred miles northeast along the coast.
All right. Well, John Anderson, I understand that you are keen on gulls, that you love gulls. And I'm going to say a lot of people don't. I mean, they steal your food. They're loud. They dive bomb people. I swear they have a sense of humor and try to aim for people's heads when they are letting it go. Tell me what makes them so great to you, because I have a feeling a lot of people are right now saying, I hate goals.
I think other people have said it better than me in the past. I'm thinking automatically of Gordon Bach, who I regard as the poet laureate of the Maine coast and shipping. And Bach sings that the world is a wheel of wonder that only the sun can swing, and the gull on the long and lifting swell is the world a given wing. And that's what gulls are. And they're the world given wings. And they're part of this landscape, and we take them very much for granted. But I think they're also a very magical part of the landscape. And if we were to lose them, we'd miss them a great deal.
You say magical. What makes them magical?
You just have to watch them flying. So gulls are very complicated birds, and my students sometimes ask me, do you think gulls know about fun and joy? And there's no question. I've spent a lot of the last 30 years sitting in a lighthouse tower watching gulls. And I was brought up in an era of ecology which emphasized things like optimizing your behavior and maximizing the return on your energy. And gulls don't do that. They didn't bother to read the book. Gulls love doing what they do, and what they do best of all is to fly. And wouldn't we all want to be able to fly like them?
And that's so interesting you say that, because I have thought they have a sense of humor, not only because I think that they really try to drop it on people, but also because I've seen a gull play with my dog. My dog was at the beach, and I've seen the dog chase the gull and the gull sweep down and tease it. It seems clearly as though they're playing some sort of game.
Oh, absolutely. We've got snowshoe here on the Seabird Island where my students and I work, and we regularly see snowshoe hare and gulls playing tag. And a short-sighted view of that is, oh, these evil gulls, they're trying to eat the snowshoe hare. Well, if that were the case, why do the snowshoe hare deliberately run into the gull colony and dance around the gulls, and then the gulls chase them and they dance away again and then come back? So I think these are a very playful group of birds, and they are incredibly human in a very, very real sense.
Noah, you say that gulls are terrific parents. How are they better parents than other birds that you study?
Well, I don't know that you could say that they're better than other birds, but they are really amazing. One of the really cool things about gulls as parents is that they have very equal parenting activities. So both males and females will sit and incubate the eggs, and both go off and collect food and bring back food. Both defend their chicks and eggs. So it really is a shared partnership for sure. And it's wonderful to see because, they're just together, and they have such a clear bond where they'll sit next to each other, they'll roost next to each other, they'll bring food around. It's great. I do want to add one really quick story to what John was talking about related to that. I watched an amazing gull nest built on a relatively new built hotel in Portland where the hotel was built, and in the winter they put up a bunch of fake owls to deter the gulls from nesting on the rooftop. And the gulls showed up in May, and if they could emote, and I think we would have seen them laughing. They walked over to the owls, they removed the heads from the owls and built a nest with the owl heads and actually nested within them. It was just incredible comedy for me as a biologist to watch that.
Oh my
You know,
goodness. Well,
I absolutely love that. But just to add on to your idea of great parents, another thing that we now know is that some of the herring gulls actually go on feeding their chicks right through the winter. And so you'll see birds down in the intertidal, and it'll be mom and dad and the kids of the year, and mom and dad are still responding to the chicks when they beg. So some of our birds, we've got GPS tags on a number of our birds, and so we're able to follow them. And some of our birds do indeed disperse way away from Maine down to the Carolinas, New York City, Philadelphia. But some of them only go as far as Southwest Harbor. And so we can see where they're going and what they're up to the whole year round. And again, this is sort of the very complicated behavior you have to deal with gulls. Just saying it's a herring gull isn't nearly sufficient. Wouldn't we all love to know why two birds nesting within 2 meters of each other, one of them decides at the end of the summer it's going to Florida, the other one decides it's going 3 miles to Bar Harbor?
like humans. They seem so ubiquitous that it's hard to believe that gulls are in decline. How steep is this decline and what's happening? Why?
It's about 5% a year that the gull populations decline in the Gulf of Maine, the nesting population. And this has been going on since at least the 1970s. And so if you do the math on that relatively to your bank account, your bank account has decreased by 5% a year, you're in tough shape. And it's crazy to imagine that because they still seem so common, right? And so yes, they're not endangered, and I don't want to imply otherwise, but that's a long time decline at a fairly fast rate. And what's driving that? There's lots of different things going on. And I think maybe what's more important to think about rather than what's driven it in the past is more what's driving it in the future. And one possibility of that, and this is just a hypothesis, okay, so not yet tested, is the fisheries in the Gulf of Maine are changing dramatically. As the water has warmed, the species composition in the Gulf of Maine has changed. There's still tons of fish out there, right? But gulls can't dive under the water. They're not like a loon where they can go underwater and chase fish. They can only eat things that are on the top. And so if the fish that were available to them 20 years ago have moved north because they're on the top of the water and new species have come in and they're just even a meter deeper, they're not available to gulls to eat. And so I think that this change of fish community is really impacting their ability to find appropriate food at times and then having that consequence on populations.
Well,
Just
Dr.
to add on
Bucher,
that
oh, go
for a
ahead,
second.
John. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Jennifer, just to add quickly on that. One of the things that's really frightening about this is that so I started being worried about gulls quite a while ago, and unfortunately, they don't have the right public relations agents to get other people worried. But I did manage to find a variety of different ornithologists who study gulls and at least like, if not love, gulls. So we had a symposium over in Germany back in 2014, getting people from all around the North Atlantic to come together and talk about gulls. And it turned out that everyone was finding declines in gulls. So there are significant population declines in Canada, Greenland, Iceland, the United Kingdom. And just to get Dr. Birgit in here, I mean, the UK, I believe, has actually started listing the herring gull as a species in serious decline.
Yeah, they're now red listed on the species of highest conservation concern in the UK, and we have the same perception here where the public just can't wrap their heads around it, doesn't know, just because they seem so abundant. And I think that's I always compare it with kind of football hooligans. I don't know if you have those in the US, but it's like a very small group of individuals that do a lot of the dive bombing, whereas the great majority of the gulls, at least here, are actually really not interested in getting their food that way. So it's not all of the individuals. Like, I always think it's a small number that ruins the reputation for the rest of them.
Oh, interesting. Well, Dr. Anilcha Bhugart, the reason I invited you on the program today is because of the research that you did a couple years ago that garnered international attention. This involved an experiment in which you shouted at gulls. So tell me about your experiment and what you found.
So we actually, yeah, we've done a series of experiments. Now, the main reason I'm doing this is because we find this human gull conflict here in the UK as well, and it's very sad. Often in the tabloids in the summer, you see lots of news items about people killing them because they steal a sandwich, and I just think that's extremely sad. Like you said, we can't imagine the seaside without seagulls. And also, it's entirely unnecessary. So I'm trying to find more peaceful manners to dissuade gulls to go after a free lunch. And the reason they go for our easy food is because we're just really bad about tidying up after ourselves as a species. And also, we're just walking around with food like we're just a free buffet. So it's very easy food as well, whereas it's much harder to get food from the oceans these days, as Noah pointed out. Anyway, so the first thing we did actually is, I don't know if the listeners have noticed this, but when your food gets stolen, it's often from the back. So if we did a little survey across all your listeners, gulls will attack from the back. And that's because it's a very risky thing to do. And so they don't want to be caught by us watching them, much like a shoplifter won't shoplift if the shop owner looks at them. So the first thing we found out is that if you stare at a gull, it's far less likely to approach the food. Now, secondly, are there any other things we could do to dissuade them? And this is where the shouting experiments came in, because we wanted to see if they perceive human cues, like an angry shout, as scary as a conspecific alarm call. So when another gull is shouting alarm, do they find human shouting as alarming? And the answer is actually yes. So we put some food here in England. We have pasties. It's kind of like a calzone, but with more butter. We put that on the ground in a plush form. We have toy items anyway. And then we got gulls down, and then we played back the call of either a robin as a control sound, or a conspecific alarm calling, or a man shouting, "Hey, get away! That's my food. That's my pasty." And it turns out that gulls really don't like being shouted at, and actually, they're far more likely to leave the food alone than if they hear a nice robin call. And
So
now
if
this
you're having
next
a
step.
picnic at the beach and gulls start kind of coming closer and closer, yell at them and that'll
Well,
work.
keep your eye on them first, because it is risky, and we are much bigger and more scary to them than they are to us. So stare at them, and then you can shout at them. They also really don't like dogs, so dogs are also not something they'll go after. And then the easiest thing is actually to just eat underneath a roof or bunting. Don't know if you have bunting in the, yeah, is that a word there? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So across market squares, you can just put bunting very closely spaced together, because that blocks their entry and exit way. And they really don't like flying underneath low roofs or umbrellas and all that. So
And
there's very easy things we can do.
your most recent experiment, I love this because now when I go on a picnic, I'm going to pack a Sharpie. What did you find?
So it seems to be the case that they, so gazing works, but then if you just draw little eyes on your takeaway box, that might actually in itself be dissuading them as well. And actually, I heard from people in Australia that magpies sometimes attack people, and then they put their sunglasses on the back of their heads when they're cycling. It's like having eyes staring back at the magpies that are territorial, and that dissuades them as well. So in general, animals don't like being stared at, because it's often a predator cue. They're being watched, and this is scary. So if there's any way to give your takeaway box some eyes, that might work. However, it doesn't always work, because we see these very distinct personalities in gulls. So some are, about half of them are scared, and the other half are like, I really don't care. Whatever you do, it's still food and I'm gonna go for it.
The other half are like the gulls that took off the owl's head and put it into
Yeah.
the fake owl's head and put
Yeah.
it in their nest. But I love that you could
Yeah.
just draw some eyes on your cooler, on your potato chip bag, and at least
Yeah.
keep some of the gulls away. Well, we do
Okay,
have
yeah.
to take a quick break. What is your story? What is your question about gulls? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Gulls are a part of life in coastal Maine, whether they're gliding over the ocean or eating scraps in the grocery store parking lot. We are learning more about these complex seabirds and what scientists are finding out about them. My guest, Dr. John Anderson, professor of ecology and natural history at the College of the Atlantic. Dr. Noah Perlett, professor with the University of New England School of Marine and Environmental Programs. And Dr. Neeltje Boeckert, Associate Professor of Animal Behavior with the Center for Ecology and Conservation at the University of Exeter in England. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us a brief email, brief please, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. John, before the break, Dr. Boeckert was explaining to us about how shouting at gulls may help them stay away from your picnic, may help you get them away from your picnic. Have you ever tried this?
We actually do our best not to shout at the birds. So my students and I spend an awful lot of time in colonies and trying to be as stealthy as possible. But one thing that I don't know people realize is one of the earliest conservation laws for seabirds that was ever passed was passed in the UK in 1869. And it was passed under pressure from the mariners because they said that it was the shouting of the gulls along the cliffs on the coast of Wales and down to Cornwall, that was actually much more effective at warning them of dangerous headlands and rocks than any lighthouse or foghorn. And so Parliament passed a law specifically to protect gulls and other seabirds. They referred to them as the Flamborough Pilots because the sailors were using the sounds of the gulls as a warning against coming in too close to the shore. So part of the issue with gulls is that our opinions of gulls keep changing, and they go from being the wonderful birds that save you from shipwreck to the wonderful birds that clean up your mess behind you to the wicked birds that are stealing your sandwich. And we never seem to make up our minds just where we're going to put them.
An email here from Rob. Are plastics in the environment impacting gull populations? Noah, do we know?
Yeah, they are for sure. Interestingly enough, I just reviewed a paper that was submitted for publication that actually found the opposite. And John was also part of this review where their study found very low levels of plastic. But there have been other studies that have found the exact opposite, where with just incredibly high rates of plastic in gull diets.
An email here
We've
from, oh, go
unfortunately
ahead, John.
found. Sorry, unfortunately, we did find the exact opposite from the paper you're mentioning. So, my students on Great Duck have been doing examination of gull vomit and gull feces for the last couple of years. And it's running pretty close to 100% microplastics in the guano. So, they're definitely being exposed to it, they're definitely passing it through their systems. What sort of impact it's having remains to be seen. But I'm afraid, as we all know, marine plastics is a big part of what you encounter when you go down to the shore.
An email here from Helen. A few years back, I was enjoying my lunch at a park along the Union River in Ellsworth. I was eating a sandwich and watching the shorebirds circling and swooping at the tide's edge. And then one gull flew down, aiming no doubt for my sandwich, but instead glomming onto my lower lip. It wouldn't let go. I was wailing away while it wailed back and eventually gave up on the lip. The worst thing was the fish breath. So, Dr. Boeckert, does this story surprise you?
No, I can totally imagine. I mean, don't really know how to answer this. Just thinking there's a lip maybe kind of feel like a mollusk. I don't know, but they do come up close for sure. And they, yes, we work on, we actually, our campus building has a colony, and just spending time in it makes you smell like fish for sure. It's, the smell is quite potent. So here we actually see that when their chicks are growing up, they feed them lots of beetles, chafer beetles, and worms are also quite high on the diet. So I think we have, we don't know exactly how they specialize, but some individuals spend very little time foraging at sea, whereas others do, or some are more kind of agricultural birds. So we might see some specialization in there as well. But yeah, my my kids have had their food stolen, and I actually am supposed to know how to deter that. So it's, yes, it's a very common occurrence.
So, and they are omnivores, clearly.
Yes. Yeah, so we it's funny. So they regurgitate food for their chicks. And so we see lots, we see some fish, lots of worms and beetles, but then also we've seen kebab, mashed potato, kind of crudité that you might get, kind of grated carrot. I think I haven't tested this, but I always think it would be interesting to see if you just sat on the beach with a carrot or an apple. I think you'd be, or a piece of lettuce, you'd probably be safe. I think they do go for the kind of highly calorific things that are relatively easy to ingest.
On the line with us now, renowned artist Jamie Wyeth, who lives much of the year on an island off the mid coast. Thanks so much for calling in, Jamie.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and I have been looking at your gull paintings for years. Tell me about your fascination with gulls. How do you, Jamie Wyeth, feel about them?
Well, what appeals to me about gulls is really their wickedness. I mean, I love that they're survivors. And as you know, most people paint gulls as if they're doves, sweet and picturesque. And I love that they're kind of nasty and so forth. And as you know, I live on an island in a lighthouse, and my fellow inhabitants are gulls. So I spend a lot of time with them. They're good models.
You painted a series of paintings called The Seven Deadly Sins and chose gulls to depict those sins. How did that idea come to you?
It came as a dream. I woke up one morning and I'd found sketches that I'd drawn in the middle of the night, and I couldn't figure out what I'd done. Then I saw seven sins, and then I noticed they were gulls. And so for the next 2 years, I spent working on that series. I'm actually approaching it again, sort of in a less ornithological way and more direct, less artifice and probably less art.
Oh, so that's what you're working on right now.
Yeah, I'm just starting to sort of approach that again. So I'm just fascinated hearing anything I can about gulls. They're wonderful models, and as I say, they're my fellow inhabitants on this island.
Well, you mentioned that you're surrounded by gulls, and I'm wondering if you've ever had a favorite gull or a favorite gull story?
Well, not really. The amazing thing is that they're so used to me at this point, sitting there drawing and painting, that they fall asleep with me. I mean, they're totally comfortable. So I think they view me as sort of an odd-looking fellow gull.
Aha. I have a, well, what do you think, Dr. Perlin? Is that true? Do you think they view Jamie Wyeth as one of them?
I can tell you that I have a gull costume that I sometimes wear for Halloween, and some of my kids have worn as well. And I feel really good in it. I feel really, really good in it.
I better get you to pose for me then. Oh, perfect.
Jamie Wyeth, before I let you go, do you have any questions for our researchers? Anything you've noticed that you've always wondered?
Well, this decline alarms me. Has the bird flu affected the gull populations at all?
Noah?
We've been testing a lot of birds here in the mid-coast, and so far we've been very, very lucky. So we're working closely with Acadia National Park, and so we've been looking at about 13 islands up and down the coast, and when we go ashore, we test the birds for bird flu. And here we've been lucky. To the south and to the north, there's been very significant outbreaks, and also in Canada in the Maritimes, and then over in the UK, there's been some quite devastating outbreaks in other seabirds, with literally thousands of birds dying. But every summer, we're really looking very, very closely at the islands for any signs of unexpected mortality. But I'm afraid we can't blame the long-term decline of the gulls on HPAI. It's other factors that are having impacts right around the North Atlantic.
And that was John Anderson. Jamie Wyeth, it's always such a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling in.
Great, Jennifer. Come back to the island soon.
I would love to. Thank you for the invitation. Jamie Wyeth, of course, one of America's leading contemporary artists. He is based here in Maine during the summertime and also some of the shoulder seasons. You can see one of his paintings that he shared with us on the Maine Calling webpage, and I highly recommend that you Google Jamie Wyeth Gull's Seven Deadly Sins. Let's see, we'll go to Torbert calling from York. Hi, Torbert, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I would like to posit that the flying prowess and bombing prowess of the gulls originated in their natural habitat, which I understand to be the islands and littoral of the North Atlantic, and particularly in the Gulf of Maine, where there's a big range in tidal height and recess, so that they are able to fly in at low tide in particular and pick shellfish and crabs and whatnot off of the area below the tide level. And then
Okay.
the bombing would come when their big, strong beaks and neck, being able to wrench muscles and whatnot out of the environment and then carry them up and drop them precisely where they have a bombing run and then get down there and beat their competitors to the fresh meat.
Well,
And
Torbert, thanks for your. I'm going to turn to Dr. Buchert because you're an animal behavioralist. Is he onto something there?
yes, and also actually the stealing, what we call stealing, is very common in the bird world in general. So it's not like we walked around with food and we were the only species they steal from. Gulls and other species as well just steal food from each other anyway. So it's really just. It's quite a sign of opportunism and behavioral flexibility that they figured they might as well steal from us. So it is a natural behavior that they adopt just to get food that's more readily available than the stuff they used to find in the sea.
Has the presence of humans changed their behavior, or at least changed their habitat and brought them inland more, or?
Yeah, so I didn't know this before I moved to Cornwall, so I'm in the southwest now. But actually, originally, they were what do you call it, flat land breeders. So we think of them as cliff nesting, but that's actually a derived trait in the whole gull family. So there's 54, about 54 different species of gulls, and only a small fraction of those are cliff nesters. And then those cliff nesters, including herring gulls, are now nesting on our roofs. But that's a trait that only emerged later, and only a small section of all the gull species have that opportunism to do that. So it's really not something that that all of them will be able to do, all of the species, and they do just are looking for a place where it's relatively predator-free, and also where it's possible to raise their chicks and find food.
A note here from our board op, Jane Donahue. They drop shells in the office parking lot all the time. I have a dent in my car for where they dropped one once. So this is why, John, some people don't like them. They don't like their cars being dented by an oyster shell being dropped on them.
So don't park your car where a gull needs to drop its shells.
Yeah, right.
I
In
think there
Portland.
is an issue with the human intrusion into gull space. Just in response to the caller, the geneticists actually tell us that herring gulls probably originated in the Caspian Sea, and one branch heads west and winds up in the UK and Ireland. And the other branch heads east all the way across Eurasia and winds up in the Americas. And to my extreme annoyance, they've just split the gulls. So The European herring gull is now the silver gull, in Latin, and we are stuck with the Smithsonian gull here in the United States. But to me, they're all one beautiful group of birds.
We'll go to Barney calling from Reedfield. Hi, Barney. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jennifer. I was a commercial fisherman on Lake Erie, and we had a lot of gulls, and they would be right on top of the boat and stuff when we're cleaning the nets. And we saw two times. Once a gull was had a like the six pack plastic thing with five, six rings, you know, one on his head and one on his foot, and he was struggling in the water, so we rescued that one. And then another one had a fishing lure, same thing. One was in his mouth, one hook was in his mouth, and the other one was in his foot, and we rescued that one. But they're, you got to be careful. They're really pretty powerful bird and kind of mean when you're when they're captured. But also, I saw like thousands of gulls on the landfills. And none of that stuff is good for them to eat. None of it. So
yeah.
I think that has a big effect on, like, any time you can go to a landfill and it's fairly open, there's gulls and a lot of crows as well. So I think that has a big, and since the 1970s, we've had all these big open landfills, so it could have had an effect.
Barney, thanks for calling. And for the record, all three of our scientists are nodding as you talk. We are going to take another quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. Very popular topic today. We are talking about gulls. What are your questions? 1-800-399-3566. Our guests for the hour, Dr. John Anderson from the College of the Atlantic, Dr. Noah Perlett with the University of New England, and Dr. Neeltje Boekert with the University of Exeter in England. What are your questions about gulls, the bird that so many people love to hate, but that other love? We'll go to Heather calling from Popham Beach. Hi, Heather. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And a shout out to John Anderson, who is my human ecology advisor and ecology biology professor at COA. So it's just great to hear his voice. I feel like I'm in class again. My interest in birds actually stems from his classes, and I live now on Atkins Bay at the backside of Popham Beach. At the mouth of the Kennebec River, and been observing a great frenzy of gulls in this bay just in the past couple of weeks at half tide out. Just so many terns and herring gulls, blackback gulls, eagles. I can't even count how many eagles and ospreys, among many other things, and baby seals. But I just wondered, I think, are there any birds that challenge gulls? As I saw eagles, you know, going after ospreys when they have fish, I don't see them going after gulls.
And all right. Well, John, since Heather was your student, I'll turn to you for the answer.
I'm afraid eagles may be quite a problem here in Maine. So my former student, Bick Wheeler, did his undergraduate thesis looking at prey remains of eagles, and about 65% of the samples that the Maine Fish and Wildlife got had seabird remains in them, with gulls being the greatest number. We see eagles coming into the colonies, particularly when our chicks are just about ready to fly, and the eagle population in Maine has exploded. And we think that is having an effect on gull colonies up and down the coast.
Heather, thank you for your question. An email here from Mark. Seagulls are extremely smart. I'll never forget when I was stationed in California, the seagulls would wait until all of us military members were lined up in formation, and then would grab the bag breakfast meals from us when we were forced to helplessly watch them from formation as they opened the bags for the food inside or flew off with the entire bag. My classroom also had a gull that we started feeding through our window. So it came through every day and would even peck in the window if we had it closed. So thank you, Mark, for that story. We'll go to Richard calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hello. I love gulls. But a couple quick comments. I remember, over 60 years ago, hearing that gulls were the canary in the coal mine when it came to DDT. The chicks were being born with deformed beaks, and that led to the banning of DDT eventually. Also, I recall back when you were at Channel 6, all of the staff in the newsroom would talk frequently about how dangerous it was running from your car into the building because the gulls loved to poop in your parking lot.
Oh, yes, Richard, they did. They did, and we were convinced that they had a sense of humor. A whole bunch of them hung out on the tower and would chase us, and it was not pleasant. So, that's why I'm pushing back on John's love of them a little bit. But I'll turn to you, Noah, and ask you about the DDT. Is Richard's recollection correct? Were they sort of the canary in the coal mine for the DDT problem?
For gulls, I mean, a lot of the birds that have been sort of historically talked about around DDT have been peregrine falcons and bald eagles, more so than gulls.
Okay. All right. But Richard, thanks for calling in. And Noah, you wanted to call on community members to help you with some of your work. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. So a huge component to our work is capturing gulls, particularly chicks, and putting two bands on their legs. One of the bands has metal numbers on it, and the other one is a colored band that has a code on it that you can easily see either sometimes with your plain eye or with binoculars or even a phone. And community members report sightings of these birds all across the world to folks like John and I. And I just want to say how incredibly valuable it is. I mean, so much of what we're learning about these birds' movements and their behavior comes from these community members submitting this information. And so I really ask, if you see one of these birds out there, please reach out to us. And likewise, like if somebody sends one to me that John banded, I share that information with John. So we have a great network of people. There's also folks on Appledore Island at the southernmost part of the state who are banding lots of gulls. So there's lots of banded gulls out there, and we really appreciate every time we hear from people.
Is there a website to go to report them?
There is. There's there's a federal banding page where you can report banded gulls. So that's like sort of the clearinghouse for all birds that are banded. Likewise, you know, reaching out to us is another way we can help track down who originally banded that gull and where.
All right. And so we'll look up that site and put it on in our Maine Calling newsletter. An email here from Don. I'm in my mid-70s. Over my lifetime, the beaches along the coast of Maine have gone from being absolutely covered with blue mussels to there being none at all, and green crabs. Mussels used to be an absolute reliable staple for gulls. Now that staple is gone, that must be a problem for them. And John, is that the case? Do you think Don's right?
I think it's a real worry, and it's not just for gulls. We're seeing huge declines in eider duck, and I think a lot of that comes from the loss of prey resources. So the Gulf of Maine is warming incredibly rapidly, much more rapidly than most other similar bodies of the ocean. And this is having huge effects on both the invertebrates like mussels and the species that depend on them. So it's a real, real worry, really across the board.
A couple different emails about feeding gulls. This one from Maggie. Feeding bread to wild birds, I have read, is bad for their health. I very often see people feeding gulls on the beach in the middle of summer, which attracts more gulls, stealing food from beachgoers and pooping on people. Is it the law to prohibit people from throwing them bread? And then George says, please, please, please do not feed the gulls when parked at fast food restaurants, parks, etc. These are wild birds. They do not need your food, and it isn't even good for them. They harass, and their poop does carry parasites. Nielce, is George right?
Yeah, we're actually looking at what is in their poo exactly at the moment, focusing on antimicrobial resistance because of, like, I see them as ecosystem sentinels, I suppose, because they're generalist feeders. And we put a lot of stuff, you know, things like sewage on agricultural fields. We pump sewage into the seas. Basically, whatever we put in the environment, you can probably see back in a gull, including, unfortunately, microplastics as well. And so, yeah, there's definitely, we find evidence of antimicrobial resistance. So basically, bacteria that are resistant to our antibiotics in their poo, they might also have parasites and various other things. This is not to say you will definitely get ill from bird poo. That is not the case. I'm more concerned about the bird's health. But yeah, feeding them, they don't need our foods. We are actually studying the long-term effects of human foods in their diet now. But I can imagine that they might end up with things similar to diabetes, for example, just because they haven't evolved to eat, our bread or chips or ice cream.
And Noah, do you know about the law in Maine? Is it illegal to feed gulls?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. We'll go to Dave calling from Caribou. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Jennifer and panelists. My question is about the landfills and all the flocks of gulls that hang around there. Are they the same species that you find on the coast?
Noah, do you know the answer?
Yeah, it depends on which landfill you're talking about, and what time of year. There's a number of species that congregate there, but herring gulls are certainly a big visitor. Great blackback gulls, ring-billed gulls, they all vary. But across the state in general, herring gull is the most common bird that you're encountering.
And Dave, you see them in Caribou? I mean, that's almost 100 miles from the coast.
Yeah, 200 miles. Tri-Community Landfill is our regional landfill, and there are flocks of gulls there all the time.
Wow. Well, thanks for calling in and sharing that with us. Let's see, we'll go to John, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, John, go ahead.
Two quick questions, Jennifer. One having to do with, do gulls have taste buds? We were at the coast years ago sharing pieces of bread and sandwiches until one of us threw him a dill pickle. He promptly spit it out and screamed at us for 15 seconds. The other question is, I see people feeding gulls in the airport parking lots. Is that a bird strike danger?
Okay, so do they have taste buds? Nilcha, do you know?
Yes, they do have taste buds.
Okay, good. So they don't like dill pickles. That's funny. And John, is this are is it a danger? Do we have documented bird strikes with an aviation problem?
Very seldom in terms of gulls. Gulls quite often get accused of it, but it's usually other species. So the famous plane landing in New York City was geese. There was a very tragic crash in Boston Harbor in 1960, which people initially thought were gulls, but it turned out to be starlings. Gulls are pretty maneuverable. They do unfortunately nest right around JFK, and we have tagged birds that go down there in the winter. So we're always worried about the gull control people shooting our birds down there. But the actual danger from gulls is not that high. The most recent bird airplane collision in Maine that I'm aware of was with a bald eagle. And so there are other species that I'd worry about more than gulls.
Thank you, John. Good question. We'll go to Jeffrey in Swanville. Hi, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Long time no talk. As I was telling your phone monitor person, who's still laughing, Schoodick Point is one of our favorite places in Maine to be. We go all the time. And of course, the seagulls outnumber the people there. Actually, the seagull, I think, should be the state bird because it outnumbers the chickadee 10 to 1. But one year we had a trip and we were all eating sandwiches, of course, on the rocks, and the seagulls were there. But there was this one seagull with a broken wing, and he cleaned up. Everybody wanted to feed the seagull. Well, the ranger showed up and said, you shouldn't feed the seagulls. And they said, but what about the little guy with a broken wing? And he said, he's a faker. He hasn't got a broken wing. He's faking the broken wing. And of course, this little guy cleaned up with the food. he would stick his wing out and drag it across the rocks. And everybody go, feed the poor
boy. Well, Jeffrey, I love that. And that is a great question to end up with, or a great story, because we started by talking about how smart they are, right, Noah?
That, absolutely.
They've got us. They've got our number. They've got our number, us humans. So, Jeffrey, thank you. I just want to ask you really quickly. We have so many people we haven't been able to get to, so many phone calls and emails. Noah, John, is there a way someone can send their goal questions to one of you?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm always happy to talk gull. And so you can get me probably most easily on the internet at jga@coa.edu.
Okay. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. The voice you just heard, Dr. John Anderson, Professor of Ecology and Natural History at the College of Atlantic, and Dr. Noah Perlett, Professor at the UNE School of Marine and Environmental Programs. He's also president of the Nuttall Ornithological Club. And with us, Dr. Neeltje Boekert, Associate Professor of Animal Behavior with the Center for Ecology and Conservation at the University of Exeter in England. Our sound engineer for the hour, Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, it's Endangered Species Day. We'll talk about that. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.